New York Real Talk with Pamela Sue Mann, Alex Lefchuk, and some incredibly inspiring guest co-presenters from the city that never sleeps via Siren Radio and Southside Broadcasting.
The sky, the sea, you seem alone to me. Secretly, it's better when you dream. A lonely place, echoes of outer space.
There we are, a ray from the grave. No, surely not. Something much more enlightening, because New York Real Talk has returned with a kind of festive special. Isn't that right, Pamela Sue Mann?
Yes, for certain. We've got the Electric Penguins. We're very excited to have them.
Indeed, with Paul X. Murphy already in place. And Paul, would you like to explain what the listener has just been hearing, an Electric Penguins track from yesteryear?
Yeah, that was a track we just called Advice, because it sounded kind of Christmassy. I suppose we were thinking Edelweiss or something. You know, there's nothing remotely German about the rest of it. It's just a kind of a snowy, Christmas, wintry, but abstract, but melodic tune that we just thought we should, as Electric Penguins, being penguins, we thought that the wintry, seasony thing and a bit of snow and something sweet and slightly psychedelic would work. So that's what that's all about.
And it sounds very good, as indeed all Electric Penguins material actually does. Of course, for the benefit of the uninitiated, as we're being joined by Mark Cummins at this very moment in time, would you like to explain what Electric Penguins are, who you are, and why, of course, you've been so significant in the Pamela Sue Mann life?
Well, okay, Electric Penguins have been going since about 2006, 2007. There's Mark now coming on. And
Hey, Paul.
hey, Mark.
Hey, guys.
And Alex. So
And
we're all in.
Alex, how are
I'm
you?
just going over the history of the Electric Penguins, Mark. So,
Oh, fantastic. Good. Okay.
and they've just, by the way, for your information, we've just played Vice from the, which I thought would be kind of seasonal, you know.
Wonderful. Well, you know, free vice men, it would be useful to actually work on that basis. So there we are.
Hey, Alex. How are you, man?
I'm great. Anyway, back to yourself, Paul, in terms of the history of Electric Penguins.
Okay. We released an album initially just as a project, kind of a coffee table project. It was received very well. There was a lot of very sweet electronica, kind of in the style of Air, that kind of French pop electronica. We developed it a bit. We had a hint of raucousness in one or two of the tracks. It was very well received, was put up for a couple of awards. I don't think we actually won any, but at least we were recognized for it. We continued making our second album, which came out about 2011, 2012, where we got a little bit more prog rocky and bringing tracks such as Highgate Hill and the like, which went down really, really well, particularly in London, as it was about London, and BBC London played that constantly throughout the that was the Olympic year, and they continued playing it for many years after that. So Mark and I dip in and out of we did a lot of live performances for about 4 or 5 years, and then various life things happened, and we kept recording, kept writing. So we're still doing it, and we've been releasing little bits over the last couple of years with a whole batch of stuff that's kind of back. It was originally all coming out right at the start of the whole pandemic thing, and it kind of put a stop to the release of the third album. But we decided to start popping it out in dribs and drabs with the full album to come out sometime March next year. So
Well, I
that's where
know
we're at.
that Pamela is very keen to do a quote deep dive into Oxygen. So, Pamela, carry on without further ado. Off you go with your interrogations for Mark and Paul.
Yeah, so goodness. The one thing that comes to mind, the one word that comes into my ears are earworm. And sometimes you just can't help it. Sometimes it's just in you. It's just in you. You've got the music in you, you've got the melody in you, and you can't help it. Do either or both of you try to avoid the earworm, or is it just something that is just you can't help it? I mean, your songs, the Electric Penguin songs, are so sing-alongable, and I mean that in the best way, because the melodies are so strong. The vocals, of course, are incredible. But I wonder, is that something that either or both of you have thought about, or is it just what comes out naturally? That there's such a strong melodic sense, and there's something that's just so universally, like you. I don't know how you could not like the Electric Penguin songs. So it
Thank
was
you, Pamela.
sort
I think, yes, it's really nice of you to say that, Pamela. I think that we both got lucky in a way, myself and Paul, that when we met in the early stages of Electric Penguins, the beginning of Electric Penguins, that I'd always kind of been searching for somebody who I felt had the same love of quality pop and melody and song structure and kind of classic song structure, which we play with and kind of expand on. But yeah, when I met Paul, and we'd both been making music for a long time. But when I met Paul first, I almost instantly felt that here's a guy who kind of hears melody and wants melody, you know, and kind of he contributes melody, and he, just equally as myself, you know. So I think, well, I feel like I got lucky in a way when I met Paul, because it's hard to find somebody. Very often when you're in bands, and as brilliant as players might be, as great a musician as they may be, and very often they are, it doesn't mean that they're great melody writers, you know. They're fantastic players, they're brilliant band members, but you don't always bump into people who kind of you think get melody the way that you get melody. And so when I met Paul, I think we both felt, if I can speak for Paul, he'll say his own thing in a second, but I think we both kind of got lucky that we both embrace melody and we love it, and but we do it in a slightly subversive or maybe quirky way. It's very straight up melody, and it is earwormy, and it's catchy, but hopefully it is, and it's really nice for you to say that it is, but we get off on it as much as you or anybody else who's listening to the Penguins, maybe, you know, because I think that most people, regardless of what genre you're into, if you're into metal or if you're into jazz, which I'm a mad jazz fan, it's always the really strong melodies, you know, that kind of suck you in. Even if it's a really abstract, like if it was a jazz piece, say a Coltrane piece or something, you know, the tunes that, even if it's a bizarre abstract Coltrane piece or a Miles Davis piece, there's always melody there, you know. And with the jazz thing, Miles could be surrounded by Wayne Shorter and Herbie Hancock and John Coltrane or whoever, but there's always a strength in melody, and it's the same in pop or metal or jazz or classical, even, you know, even the great classical tunes, like the biggest classical tunes that we all know and love, and I listen to a fair bit of classical, but it's always the ones that have that big hook, you know, it's just
a good example of that, Mark, would be that when Coltrane did his version of My Favorite Things, which is a real, you know, the sweetest little song from that film, but his version turns, it just takes that little bit of melody and completely subverts it. I guess we try to certainly do that with, we love a sweet little, we could be just going on some, off on some tangent, and then Mark will just sing this little thing, which is like, came straight out of a pop song, and it just goes into this scape of music that it wasn't written, you know what I mean? That if you'd written if you come up with a melody first and just try to finish out the logic of the song, you might write a sweet song, but the melody is actually coming out of a subverted world of you know, in the case of say Oxygen, it's kind of there's a simple melody there, but there is sort of very dark, almost metallic guitars going around it and that kind of thing. Right back to the very start, we were doing these tunes, it was the same. Sometimes there's a melody, sometimes there's just some weird soundscape in which a sweet melody comes in. Other times we've had a little hook and then just, right, how can we subvert our own hook, you know?
Yeah, I something just came to me, and it was messages from the universe, you know, and I think honestly it's this idea that and Paul and I have spoken about this idea that is sort of beyond words or reasoning, and it's like energy, where if you I'm sort of adding my own string to this, but it's like if there's something to say, if there's something that needs to be said, whether it's coming through you or you feel like you're saying it, it's having the trust to just let something seemingly really simple come through, and come through in a way that's unique. So it's at the same time, it's both universal, but it's unique, and that may sound silly, but it's a perfect combination that I think is quite rare. And you have to have the trust to let it through. And even if it's, I think what happens with a lot of people when they're young songwriters or bands, they feel the need to be clever. So if it's just a few notes, it's like, nah, they throw it away. It's rubbish. It's almost like there's all this amazing stuff coming through the universe, and you're like, no, it's dumb. It's cheesy. It's not good. And I think that cultivating your belief in what comes through and allowing it to come through without that editor shutting it out or trying to make it so complicated, I think there's a real gift in just allowing that seeming simplicity without the judgy person going, no, 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 it's not cool enough, it's not clever enough, it's not, it actually, if you let it through, it's perfectly what it needs to be.
Do you know what, Pam, that's described how I feel about melody perfectly, what you just said there, because we've all been in bands from the age of 15, 20, whatever it might be, and the guys, you know, they try to complicate it too much, you know, they try to just embrace the simple pop melody, expand it slightly and arrange it in a certain way, whatever way you think is good, but just let that pure melody that everybody loves, just let it come through. And it's the way you've described it there is exactly how I felt since I was 15. You know, you get four guys in a room or five guys in a room, and you cut me or someone else comes up with a very simple but really, really catchy melody, and the guys go, "Ah, it's kind of too poppy, man. You know, we need to." But yeah, you're right. The way you described it, Pam, is exactly how I feel personally about melody and songwriting and allowing a natural flow of melody, as simple as it may be, just to come through, because some of the greatest songs ever written are just very, very simple melodies, but they stay with you forever and they touch a lot of people. And I think it's for me, listening to music, it's essential to have. Sometimes you don't need it, or you can just listen to Ornette Coleman just blasting a saxophone and he's killing you, and it's good for a time, but for me, I always go back to the ones who are melodically stronger, you know? Sweet, sweet melody, you know? That's how I feel about it.
Lyrics or melody, which is more important, Paul?
When I'm working on a lyric, I get really absorbed by a lyric, but when I'm working on a melody, I tend to try and move the lyric to, if I love the melody, then the words just, they don't even have to make sense. They just have to serve the melody. So sometimes, even in that song we played at the start, there's a few lines in that Mark sings that don't make logic sense as such, but they make total sense in the course of the melody. So, and that's like the refrain and the chorus is just, listen, the snow is falling. That's all it says, nothing else. Then Mark goes into this little story again, which there's no point in examining in detail. So the lyrics are—they're very important that they serve the melody, you know, that they work with the melody. But when you're purely working on the lyric, when you're actually writing a lyric and not listening to a melody, yes, you're going to get very absorbed in saying something meaningful. But once it goes into the music world, there's another level of meaning that comes out of the melody and the soundscape that you're using. Very often, that's another factor, you know, because when we might have a simple melody. And then it depends whether you're putting a strong rhythm behind it, or maybe no rhythm at all, just soundscape. That can change the words that you put into that melody. So I guess what I'm saying, I kind of feel they're as important, but they must serve the melody and not the other way around, for my money anyway.
Oh, wow. So what do you think, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, I think, they're both obviously extremely important, but if I was pushed, I'd probably say, as important as lyrics are, and they're incredibly important, and they're the thing that stay with us. But people have gotten away with maybe not such great lyrics, you know, technically maybe, but the hook is so great that you just go with it and you love it. But if you can balance it and sort of do both and catch both and capture both in a song, you're on a winner, I think, you know, like it's.
Are you suggesting, Mark, that Kylie Minogue and I Could Be So Lucky or Padam Padam might not be the world's finest lyrics?
No, Alex.
But then again, but it resonates with so many people. I Could Be So Lucky, 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 or wishing you were lucky, or wishing you know you got a break, or wishing you could fall in love or keep a lover. You know, I Could Be So Lucky. It sounds like a
Yiddish. So lucky, you know.
So lucky is almost like please help, you know, in some ways, you know. I could be so lucky. I wish I was lucky. I wish things would happen for me. I wish things would work out for me. So the simplest things can send this huge message to so many people. Yeah.
Well, Alex, the question is, what do you think? Lyrics or melody?
really depends in terms of the context in many ways. You take something like the classical composers and, say, Lieutenant Kie and Prokofiev. And Prokofiev, obviously, it's a melodic Christmassy theme, which I definitely go for. And yet, at the same time, you look at something like Lennon and McCartney, and you know, when I was younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way. It's clearly a plea from the heart, as Mark said. You know, you've got a whole range of things there, and indeed, as Lennon himself said, it was, you know, a plea from his heart that basically didn't know what was happening then, and it was a case of help from that perspective. So I think it's a bit like yin and yang, really. It's a bit like my other question, which would be competitive or collaborative. Which one would you edge for? Pamela.
That was a perfect volley. That was a beautiful volley, Alex. This is a masterclass in interviewing. Wow, wait, what was I? Sorry, I was caught up in that and I forgot what the question was.
Would you view the songwriting process and the musical creation process as being competitive or collaborative at its sort of finest? I mean, you know, when you're writing things, do you think we're going to be better than that and so on? I mean, again, citing Lennon and McCartney, they used to very much look to challenge each other.
I think within myself, it would be competitive with myself and hopefully collaborative with myself. And in a group project, it's definitely collaborative. It's not, I mean, coming from my perspective, it's not competitive. It's kind of like, okay, let's rally together and do, you know, the best of you, the best of me, the best of all of us. Let's bring it and let's make it. So you could say that music and lyric are competitive, because they need to be collaborative. It's almost like you've got, to me, great music coupled with great lyric, it squares itself. It's like if they both serve the other. That's why if you have a beautiful, you know, if you have beautiful music melody and you have beautiful lyrics, you've got something magical. You've got something so incredible from the two of those things together. They enhance each other. So in terms of the competitive or collaborative, to me, I think, and then this is just me, but I feel like the only person to really be competitive with is yourself. And in terms of, yeah, people push each other like Lennon McCartney, sure. That, yeah, absolutely, that's great. At the same token, I think it's really the collaborative nature. Even if you feel like it's sort of competitive, in a band and collaborative situation of people creating music together, you want it to be the best it can be. It's not like, you know.
It be both, really, guys. When you think about it, it's kind of both, isn't it? Because, you know, like say when you're, if Mark and I were working on a song, I might come out with some little line or something, and then Mark will go, oh, how about this? And I will take that and go, well, how about this? Because, you know, so you're bouncing. You're competing to come up with it and even to improve on it and come up with another line. And then you go, oh, that's great. How about this? So it kind of builds, you know, so the competition can become part of the collaborative process. You know, you're both competing to see how great you're competing against each other, but on behalf of each other, you know, when there's two people writing.
Yeah,
I think that was the case.
Pamela, I think you were keen to explore Oxygen in terms of the video and the production of the video and the strange shape that kind of takes us all from that point of view, if memory serves.
Beatles, Sgt. Pepper on steroids brought through an Andy Warhol filter. And I don't know. I want to ask Paul about that because it is so I watched it and heard it and it washed through me, and it was just it's not even an intellectual exercise. It's like
it kind of what happened really was we were just looking for an image, as we often get stuck on trying to decide, well, what would be a single image that would represent the feel of this song. And Mark and myself bounced around we experimented with a couple of things, and then Mark hit me with this image one day, which was just a black square with all these grids cut out on it, and it just had a sort of a vibe to it. We both went, for some reason, that's the thing. Then I thought, in order to make, because I need to put up something for video, so I was literally going to put the lyric up against that thing and then see if I could move it about a bit. And then I got a bit carried away and wondered if I could deconstruct it, and in the course of deconstructing it with an animation program, it turned into this creature. And I thought, you know, listening, the song is about, this is a dark soul creature, if you like. It turned into this winged thing, which basically by animating it down into this structure, it became the creature that was the soul of what we were talking about in the song, which is about this darkness that's going on in the world that's taking us over. And there's a kind of a debate, and it's kind of an ecology type of a thing. So there's things like that. There's the lyric, which is the line, "The oxygen is only for ladies." And that's kind of a slightly sinister, sneering kind of poke at Uber, what's the word, where people just basically don't take the environmental issues seriously and treat it as a thing for, oh, that's for girls type of thing. That's kind of what the line meant to me. And I thought that this dark psyche became represented with this winged creature, which we just kept going through the video then, which was actually just made from a creature devised from the image that we thought represented the song.
And yet not used as a theme for the recent COP28, I notice, which was a tragedy. Still, never mind. Dubai's loss is the world's game.
Yeah.
Pamela.
So what's next?
For penguins?
For the penguins. Come on, we need something down the pike. You know, we need something for 2024 to be excited about. We need more penguins. So what's next?
Well,
bearing in mind, 2024 might see Donald Trump back in the White House. I'm just saying.
We have some songs ready for him. Don't worry.
We have a few for him, Paul. Yeah, man.
So, Mark, do you want to talk about the next one we're going to do?
The next one we're going to do, should I say what it's called?
Yeah, why not? Yeah.
Are we going to call it Follow the Herd? Is that the one?
Yeah.
It's quite different in many ways, in lots of ways from Oxygen. It's less stompy. It's more cinematic, Paul, maybe, perhaps, or there are more layers to it, I think, and more changes to it. It's not as in your face, but the chorus, we think, is possibly in your face. But we're planning to release that, I think, Paul, in the early-ish in the new year.
Yeah.
And then go with a third one, or maybe it's the fourth one, actually, from the album. And then the album in late spring, early summer, as Paul said.
Yeah.
And is the album still as important to 21st century musicians as it was back in the day? Because, you know, with respect to the multitude of streaming platforms, with respect to more and more of the students that I take, they don't even have a concept of the album. It's basically they'll buy a song because they like it, they'll purchase it, and that's it, effectively. But that whole essence of the album, which had a whole history in itself, is that something which you're still battling to ensure that actually the album is an important aspect because it's more than just a collection of discrete items? Paul?
Yes, probably. Remembering that we come from a generation that really valued the whole experience of like putting it on side A and then on side B, and we still do. That's absolutely fine that people are popping on single songs, and for that reason we've done what we didn't do before, which is actually to put out a couple of single tracks before the album, which is fine. So, but at the end of the day, we're not here to change people's listening habits, but we have to be true to what we like to do, and we construct these things in little collections so that it's like there might come a day when artists will no longer have, I don't think so, they'll no longer have exhibitions and they'll just be releasing one-offs on some...
No, we'll simply replace Paul, yourself and Mark with Electric Penguins ChatGPT, and they'll basically sort of just be artificial intelligence. They'll just promote the material, presumably.
Absolutely, of course. There'll be no need for us in a couple of years. So while we're still here and they haven't done that, we'll continue writing the material and then allow people to decide for themselves in good time, you know, maybe in 20 years' time, which is the better.
Just saying, for the benefit of the listener, neither Pamela, Paul, nor indeed Mark are indeed artificial intelligence creations. Not too sure about myself, but very few people have been. So there we are.
I miss the panda. I'm missing the panda, Alex, I have to say. I say two words, concept album. Viva la concept album.
Yep.
And I think, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know whether Paul, I think Paul will agree, but in some ways, if my understanding of what a concept album is, I think the three of our albums are kind of concept albums, Paul. Do you agree? I mean, it's like the three of them are very, very different and kind of purposely so. We kind of, well, not, we didn't really sit down and say, like, we can't do that again. We've got to do this. But it was a more organic and natural kind of change of tack from record to record. But the three of them do sound very different, but they're very connected. They're very, very connected as well. And we always wanted to do a trilogy. We will do more as well, but we definitely wanted to do three albums. And again, well, getting back to Paul's production or our production, but Paul's the main producer. But I think Paul's production is so fantastic that although the three records sound very different, they're still connected. You know, there's still a connection. And I think, as I say, that's due to Paul's, it's due to how we write and how we approach writing and production. But Paul nails it completely when it comes to the production and the engineering and the sonic payoff that you get from the record. So I think it wasn't a conscious decision to kind of change from record to record. That was just an organic evolving process. But I think that could get lost, I think, with maybe in another scenario with a different band or whatever. But I think Paul's production keeps the whole thing connected and linked. And I think you can listen to the three records and know it's the same band, even though they're evolving and changing and exploring different areas of music and different approaches to arrangement and songwriting. I think personally, I think it's the production that keeps the thing solid and sort of together, you know.
But we do keep it. There's a continuous line, I would argue, right from the very first record. There are moments vocally, the vocal approach has been the same in every single one of them, you know. Yeah. Even whether it's like when we get into the little chorused vocals or when Mark is just singing it, there's no trickery applied, say, to Mark's vocal. Mark goes on the microphone and sings whatever it is. Then sometimes I get on and do some sort of composite backing vocal type stuff. Then everything else around all that is whatever we've written. And we, on each of the albums, I think the only thing we've really changed is the mood of how we backed it each time. But we just kept writing and then changed the landscape of the writing for each album. I think that would be the key difference that I hear.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So following on from the idea of what I understand a concept album to be, and in my former bandmates, we would sit and talk about this, that it's like a world you climb inside for the duration of that, you know, that collective piece. Now these days, maybe EP. I like to think of it, maybe it's a numerology thing, but I like to think of it as like 10 songs, at least 10 songs are good. You're stepping into this world. It is a world that is unique. It's not a world that should be like any other world. And for the duration of that time, you're in that place, which hopefully engulfs you in its own unique magic. And that's your concept album. And then you move on to the next one. And there might be things like a band like Radiohead. It might be things that, oh, you're like, that's definitely Radiohead. But you go from OK Computer and, you know, you go to In Rainbows, or you've got a different sonic landscape, a different world you're climbing into. And with the Penguins, that holds true. So with that said, you know, we want our next concept album from the Penguins.
But surely, Pamela, you need to actually go for Electric Penguins, make to Electric Pandas. I mean, you know, allowing for the fact you did actually ask me to embrace my inner panda, maybe I've actually sort of just, you know, manifested this, you know, for the whole essence, you know, Electric Penguins and Electric Pandas, especially now that the two pandas have left Edinburgh and gone back to China and are frolicking in the zoo over there. So, you know, there we are.
I'm assuming that the listeners are unaware that Alex has turned into an actual panda while we're all sitting here having this conversation.
The green hoodie. Let's not forget the green hoodie. That just...
Yeah, the panda in the green hoodie is a vital part of the whole system, basically. And if you want to see a photograph of that, check out Facebook. That's all I'm saying. In terms of the festive period, obviously, we started off, Paul, with a song which had a sort of certain lyrical routine. Any plans for you, gentlemen? Mark, starting off with yourself, will you be celebrating the holiday season?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll celebrate it with my wife and our son. We'll have a pretty quiet Christmas, and we'll just... I'm really looking forward to Christmas this year, actually. But we'll celebrate it. We stay at home. We live here about 3 kilometers from the center of Dublin. And we'll just have a really chilled, relaxing week or so, week and a half. And we'll play loads of jazz. We might play some Penguins and other stuff and drink lots of
pandas,
wine.
Obviously, because the Pandas haven't been formed as yet. I'm just saying, we need to put it out there. We've had so far this year, we've had obviously the whole notion of flamingos. We've obviously pushed Penguins, but I feel the panda needs to obviously have its time in the sun as well.
Absolutely. No, I'm looking forward to Christmas this year, for sure. Just to relax. Last year, we went traveling to Spain last year for over the Christmas and New Year period, and it was amazing. But this year, we're looking forward to just hanging out in the house and relaxing. Yeah, just relaxing.
And Paul?
Yeah, well, I'm going to head down to Dublin myself. I'm living in Donegal at the moment, which is the far northwest of Ireland. And, but my family is all from Dublin, and my two children live down there. So I'll be joining them in the old family homestead and just hooking up for the day. That's it. Yeah.
Well, Pamela, that has brought us to the end of this festive themed New York Real Talk. We didn't actually do the wacky New York moment question, but then I think we were getting into the album question and the collaboration or competitive question. So we can still go with the favorite pickle moment, though. But over to you, Pamela, before we go there.
Okay. And then I have something to add. So I'm going to just step away from all of this for a moment before I do add it. But first, I'm going to say from New York City, which is home of the world's finest pickle. Hold on a moment. I'll be right back.
It's the anticipation that is always wonderful when you're talking about radio recorded as live. It means you can actually fill with all sorts of things whilst your co-presenter decides to actually leave the actual area, come back and actually present a green sausage or indeed pickle. Gherkin or possibly pickle.
And he comes from Katz Deli, not the one in New York City, but the one in Connecticut. He was $5.99 plus tax. Very well worth it. And I think this is, now we can safely say that we are home of the world's finest pickle, who my niece, Aoife Fitzpatrick, named Briny.
Briny.
There you are. Follow that.
Great pickle.
Yeah. Other than, Pamela, last two questions for Paul and Mark, please.
Yeah, number one, have you had a good time with us, starting with Mark? And number two, will you come back soon? Because honestly, this was an incredible conversation.
Thanks, Pamela. Yeah, I mean, we enjoy talking to you guys so much, and we're really grateful that you want to chat about our music and talk to us and be our friends. And we're really, really, really grateful. And we will definitely come back and see you anytime you want to see us. We'd love to come back and see you. And thanks so much, guys, both of you. Thank you so much. And happy Christmas to both of you and your families.
Happy Christmas.
There you go. Indeed.
Yeah,
Paul,
well,
anything
Mark
to add? Or is it a case of I disagree entirely with anything Mark's just said?
What Mark said.
Well, that makes sense. So there we are. The usual wrap-up then, Pamela. New York City is, of course, home of Briny.
The world's finest pickle.
Woohoo!
Tell me.
COP26 is with us. Oh, well, it's been and gone. It's COP28 now. You see, they move so quickly these days. So let's talk about COP28, which obviously has had already some controversy around its location and indeed its leader. But allowing for climate change, etc., we're delighted to welcome two fabulous souls here who managed to synthesize the best of the natural world and indeed exhibitions in general. First of all, we're delighted to welcome science and natural world expert Liz Bonin. How are you, Liz?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. And we've also got a fabulous exhibition artist, Georgia Tucker, with us. How are you, Georgia?
Yeah, I'm really good, thank you.
Excellent. Now, if I said the narrow-headed ant and the flapper skate, many people would say, have you lost your head once again? No, it's two of the very rare species, among others, that we may not have heard of. So, Liz, talk to us initially about the narrow-headed ant and the flapper skate.
Well, the flapper skate is the largest of all European skate and ray species. It measures 2.5 meters nose to tail and 2 meters across, and it lives in the North Sea and north of Scotland, off the coast of Scotland. It's a top predator, so it keeps a lot of smaller fish and mollusks and crustaceans in check. So it's a really important species, but it's been critically endangered. And some of the extraordinary work of conservation organisations here in the UK have been helping the population to recover, thanks to the National Lottery funding that we're celebrating today, as well as celebrating the species that we share this country with and the incredible organisations working to save them.
Georgia, of course, as an exhibition artist, you're kind of really producing material which will enable these species to resonate into the future without necessarily going and disturbing their natural habitats, presumably.
Absolutely. And it's been really fascinating for me to research into every single one and try and communicate and reimagine them in the space and bring them to life. And obviously, this wouldn't be possible without the National Lottery, who it was really interesting for me to find out actually National Lottery players raise £30 million a week for good causes. So it's just been a privilege to be able to celebrate that through art.
Not only that, but since 1994, get this, almost £2 billion has been raised for conservation projects, for land, nature and biodiversity projects, thanks to the National Lottery. Something like 4,600, almost 5,000 different projects have been funded because of the National Lottery.
It's amazing. Yeah.
And that also leads it, of course, to the Habitats of Hope exhibition, which takes place at a wonderful place, which I haven't been to for many years, I must admit, probably not since the 20th century. It's the Horniman Museum, of course, and gardens, where you can see Habitats of Hope there from the 30th of November to the 10th of December. Share with us a little bit about that, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was researching the animals, I was really keen to communicate their habitats as well, because the animals all form a role within their habitat and we are all interconnected as species. So I split it up into forest, heathland, marshland, and coastal, which was pink, orange, blue and green to me, and that allowed the creative to really kind of come alive as well. And then there's this voiceover in the space by the Tree of Life, which communicates kind of a poem like with a musical soundscape as well, about how we are all interconnected and we need to pledge to support these amazing individual lesser known creatures in the United Kingdom. And then as you walk into the space, there's also three screens which bring alive the animals with their particles and within the habitats as well. So there's a lot going on. It's very immersive. And it would be, yeah, it's something that you need to see really to experience.
Right? It's absolutely stunning. I walked in there this morning and I got really emotional from the get-go. It's such a multi-sensory experiential thing. It's perhaps a little bit more difficult to describe it, isn't
absolutely.
It, Georgia? But all I can say is it's an absolute feast for all the senses. And it also has a really important, inspirational, an emotive message with it. I think Georgia is a supremely talented young woman, and I really urge you to go down to the Horniman and have a look at it. It's on until the 10th of December.
Yes.
It's free. That was really important to you as well,
so
Georgia,
important.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, I think the arts need to be more accessible. So having a free drop-in project for me is really important, and especially a place, a venue where younger generations often visit as well, because these environments, these creatures are in their hands in the future and they need to learn more about them, definitely.
And Liz, you're also president, of course, of the Wildlife Trust. Do you feel in terms of gender? I mean, the message is obviously out there, but equally, there are counter narratives in which people are saying, oh, yes, it's all blah, 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 et cetera. Are we making progress? I mean, can we look forward to the next 20, 25 years with optimism to see more species being saved from extinction from your own perspective?
I think with people like those I've met in the Wildlife Trust, but also in the other organizations involved in this exhibition, we are in good hands. I mean, these are heroes to me. They are a testament to what we can do, what we can achieve when we're at our best as humans. People who implicitly understand that we cannot thrive on this planet of ours, in this country of ours, without thriving ecosystems. And so that gives me a lot of hope. But also, I think we have to be very realistic about the fact that the UK is one of the most nature-depleted countries in the world. The whole planet is facing a biodiversity and climate crisis. And there are serious issues with respect to what we might prioritize as a society in the West when it comes to profit and GDP and power and money over taking care of our life support systems that we rely on basically to survive. So I think it's a healthy thing to look at both the good and the bad of what we can be, to face it head on, to understand that we all play a part in creating the crises that we face, but that we also have a lot more clout than we might think, and that it really helps to take examples, to take inspiration from exhibitions like Georgia's and the people that she's celebrating and the species that she celebrates, to really act for nature, act for our future, because with action, hope is everywhere.
Absolutely. And finally, Georgia, where can people go to actually find out further details about the Habitats of Hope exhibition and more?
It's on the Horniman Museum and Gardens website online. So all the information is on there.
And there's always lotterygoodcauses.org.uk to find out more details about how the National Lottery are also helping out in this one as well. And finally, from your good self, how can people actually follow Liz Bonin? I mean, obviously, you've got so many, you've got an ever-growing army of fans that are actually out there, Liz. You know, it's
an army of narrow-headed exactly,
Dan. Precisely. do you do these the socials as well?
I am. I'm on at Liz Bonin on Insta and on X, as it's called. Georgia, where are you?
I'm on at underscore Georgia Tucker on Instagram. There we go.
Liz Bonin, science and natural world expert extraordinaire, and indeed Georgia Tucker, exhibition artist, also extraordinaire. Huge thanks, and keep on keeping on.
Thank you.
It's Christmas time. There's no need to be afraid. At Christmas time, we let in light and we banish shade.
And in our world of plenty, we can spread a smile of joy. Throw your arms around the world at Christmas time. But say a prayer.
Christmas bells that ring there are the clanging chimes of doom. Well, tonight, thank God it's them instead of you.
And there won't be snow in Africa this Christmas time. The greatest gift they'll get this year is life.
Deprived, if the tables turn, would you survive?
Here's to them underneath that burning sun.
You ain't gotta feel guilt, just selfless. Give a little help to the helpless.
Do
do.